Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Elf and Rob Beard Temple. Rob, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Steve, my feet were frozen on Saturday afternoon. I was very despondent and unhappy and depressed. It was gray. It was cold. It was snowy. It was a devastating loss. But now I'm in Florida. It's 75 degrees and sunny, and I'm feeling better.
Oh, good. I'm in Amherst, where it's 33. All right, so. Well, I'm doing what I love, Rob. You know that. I'm doing what I love.
Oh, yeah.
And I do love it. All right. Bean counters kill businesses. That's been my theme.
There you go.
That I've talked about over and over again. Has baseball at times been a victim of bean counters?
Oh, geez. Well, yeah. I mean, that's a big part of the game now. And it's funny. You started to see, I don't know if you caught any of the coverage from any of the outlets from the general manager's meetings last week. But, you know, now we're starting to see some cracks. There was, you know, obviously some agents take some shots at teams that are tanking. I saw a couple of GMs that kind of hinted around that, yeah, you know, there's teams out there that are tanking. And I wonder if we're going to see any changes because of this. I mean, I think we might still be at the point where people are kind of quietly cranky, but I think that volume is going to get amped up. I mean, some of it is, you know, prelude to the new CBA talks, you know, to
right.
Around an agreement. But I think there's just some genuine grumpiness throughout the league and it's funny because some of it is the bigger market teams that are spending money and putting together clubs and trying to win, and I think there's a little discontentment with some of the other clubs that aren't maybe living up to all their spirit of the game requirements. So maybe the day of the bean counter, I don't think it ever goes fully away, but maybe that influence will wane just a little bit. We can keep our fingers crossed.
Because the late George Steinbrenner, one of his primary complaints about the luxury tax is not that he had to pay it. I mean, you know, he understood it. But yeah. His complaint was that teams kept it.
Yep. Yeah.
When they were supposed to take the money and invest it in personnel. And what was it, 3 years ago? Was it 18 that each team got $50 million?
From the settlement?
Right?
They got it from the .com sale, yeah.
Yeah, it's $50 million each. So between mm-hmm. luxury tax and $50 million each, what'd the Pirates do with theirs?
They have a team of lawyers that explored the meaning of the words "improve the franchise" and stretch those words to the limits. You know, you think improve the team means, you know, get a right fielder who can actually play and hit the ball.
Yeah.
But I think what the Pirates have done is take that to mean, you know, upgrade the academy in the Dominican, you know, buy the single-A franchise in Bradenton, put a new, you know, playing surface on the field in Greensboro, maybe fluffy robes in the clubhouse at PNC Park. All these things, you know, they have, you know, I was talking with somebody with the organization toward the end of the season. And he was like, you know, I always hear, you know, the Pirates aren't spending money. The Pirates aren't spending money. He says, we're spending money. We're just not seeing it we're not doing it in ways that people see easily. And because he was kind of poking fun at it in a way too, because, you know, the Pirates have, I'm down here in Bradenton now for a minor league mini camp. And there's a coaches meeting going on as I was leaving the complex. And it was just like a clown car situation. Guys just kept filing into the coach's room. It's not a big room, but they were packing it. And, you know, I can't remember the Pirates having so many. I mean, yes, there's a lot of minor league coaches, but they have so many coaches and informatics staff and analytics staff and strength and conditioning and nutrition. And I believe they travel with two personal masseuses for the team. Those all, you know, all those things do cost money, and you can say that's pouring it back into the franchise. So instead of spending $60 million on a right fielder, they're spreading it around and trying to hire, you know, more coaches and technicians and analytics people to figure out how to build a $60 million outfielder out of a guy that you draft and you maybe sign for, you know, $200,000.
So let's get to what you alluded to earlier, the CBA, which is now, which when we had talked near the end of the season, I said that'd be a topic you and I would broach at this time of the year. So the clock is ticking as we do this, because just past the end of the month it runs out. It doesn't matter now. You can have all the lockouts you want between December 1st and New Year's Day. Who cares? Along the way, along business, they might care. How far apart are they, and where are they far apart?
Well, how far are you and I right now? A couple hundred miles, right?
You're in Florida, and I'm in Massachusetts, so we're about 1,500 miles apart right now.
I think they're probably twice as far apart. I get the impression that there's just a lot of pent-up animosity, and not even pent-up, not even hidden anymore in some cases, animosity between these two sides over a lot of issues. I think the players' union wishes now it had done a better job with the last CBA, that it maybe it whiffed on a few things, and the owners have taken advantage. And I think this time the Players Association has determined that that's not going to happen again, come hell or high water. So everybody I talk to in this industry, you know, we kind of joke the winter meetings start, were supposed to start on December 5th. Or December 4th, whatever that Monday, that first Monday in December. And everybody talks about, I'll see you at the winter meetings. And then there's a pause, and then we just laugh because we realize we're not going, there's not going to be winter meetings. There'll be a lockout. I think it's just a question at this point how long it lasts. You know, is it going to be a few days, a few weeks, or is it going to be we're watching minor league baseball on ESPN until July? I don't know. It's hard to say at this point because there's a lot of lawyers locked in rooms in New York together and they're talking and you don't hear a lot of love. Not even from people who are leaking little bits and pieces here and there. There's never an optimistic message. So I think at this point, there's going to be some kind of work stoppage, whether or not there's any, you know, work going on. I don't think it'll be a play stoppage yet, but eventually there's a danger of that.
Is the primary issue the salary cap, which you and I both know the luxury tax is kind of a cap in some ways. Is that part of it where the owners would like to get better control over themselves at the expense of the players' freedom?
I think that's a big part of it, and there might be some, you know, debate within the owner's side on that because, you know, from what we understand, MLB has already talked about putting in a floor, $100 million floor.
Right.
And that obviously I would think it would be fate. It wouldn't like you would go like in the Pirates case, was their salary, their payroll last year was like $40 million. So it would probably be phased in over a couple of 3 years, you know, 75, 85, then the full $100 million or whatever, but a floor. And the players aren't real keen on the idea of a cap, obviously, because nobody wants their income capped. But, you know, management isn't too keen on the floor. To a degree, I think there's some teams that would be fine with it. Teams like the Pirates, you know, they'll say that they're okay with it, but they're obviously not. But I think it goes beyond that, too. I think that there is, and this is something when I've talked to Tony Clark in the past, he's made it clear that the union, you know, isn't happy. Maybe, you know, there have been grievances filed against the Pirates and the Marlins, and I think maybe one or two other clubs about the revenue sharing money not being used, as you mentioned before, not being used for what it should be used for. And I think they're going to want greater clarification on what exactly improving the team means. And I think just hammering out those words, getting a new definition of those words, that could be the biggest sticking point. Because I don't think that the players know that all these teams have money. They're not happy with how it's being spent. And capping the upper level of it, it's going to take a lot to get them to agree to that. so there's a many issues out there, and there are probably some that I'm not even fully cognizant of that they're coming into play, because there are things that would be 2 or 3 years down the line in terms of how this game is watched and where, you know, in terms of streaming and whatnot, and all that's going to generate money, and how is that money going to be divvied up and shared or not shared and whatnot. And there's a lot to consider, and not all of it just deals with the next couple of years.
In fact, just to give everybody an example, Rob's talking about with a floor. It's the minimum amount you can spend on salaries. And the Philadelphia 76ers, when they were, quote, tanking a few years ago, were hit with a fine from the NBA because they fell below the floor. And people don't, I think people forget that that happened, that they fall below the floor. Expansion of playoffs means more money for ownership. Is that correct? Something that also needs to be negotiated with the players, that they get a bigger slice of postseason money?
I think that, that's going to be on the table as well, because as you mentioned, I think MLB needs to be careful here that it finds the sweet spot, because you can expand your playoffs, but when you already have a 162 game season, when does it become, you know, when you have too much of a good thing, you know, do you really, like, you know, you remember last season, that weird COVID season, where we had two teams with losing records in the postseason. Just because they decided to have, you know, whatever it was, 10 or whatever for each league. You know, you really can't let it get to that. It really, when does it dilute the product too much? You would think 162. That's why I've never been a big fan of even the wild card teams. Because you play 162 games, you should know a little bit about who's good and who's not. And every time a wild card team wins a round in the playoffs, it's almost like a defeat, I think, in a way, because you're saying, here's this team that, you know, wasn't good enough to win its division, yet here it is now just catching a break in a 5 or 7-game series. I think that's something else that they're going to take a look at, is expanding the number of games. Maybe the wild card round goes best of three now, which, again, that's insanity, but, you know, more TV money, it's more tickets sold.
Well, let's get to that, more tickets sold. When in 1994, the Dodgers had 32,000 season tickets. I believe the number now is 8,000. Now, they still draw, but they have 8,000 season. In other words, they have, I mean, your season tickets have gone down 24,000 since the day a strike took place in 1994. The game has never fully recovered, in my opinion, since that fateful year of 94. What are you going to do to the image of your sport, your business, in the eye of the fan if you mess this up?
Wow. Yeah, that's a good question, because, you know, the last time I'm trying to think back to the after effects after that 94 strike. And when they came back, remember, was that the year that they had they tried to do the replacement player thing too in 95?
Yeah, they tried to do the replacement player thing in the spring training of 95, the Brian Dombachs of the world.
Yeah. And you know, that just as much, I think, is the not having the big league player, you know, having the big league players on picket lines, I think the replacement player thing kind of dinged the game's reputation as well, because it showed that management was out, you know, just the desperation and the make a buck attitude of management. And I agree with you. I don't think in many ways the game has fully recovered. And there's been stuff that's happened since then, that, you know, the steroid scandal has happened, you know, and other things that, I think is, you know, it's almost, sometimes I even wonder if MLB cares as much about the fans in the seats, because you're always going to have fans in the seats for the jewel event, for the, you know, for the World Series, for the playoffs, the All-Star game. But maybe you don't need fans in seats if people are watching on their phones and they can watch it anywhere, anytime. And you're going to be making revenue through that, maybe even more revenue than you would from some guy, you know, plunking down $50 for a ticket. Maybe that, you know, that's where the attention of the league's focus is heading toward now. that, you know, maybe we can afford to ding the rep of the game a little bit, because at the end of the day, people are still going to flip on their phone or their laptop or their iPad or whatever and watch a few minutes of a game. Maybe not even a whole game, but that's okay. We still collect for the whole price. So there you go.
See, I've always felt sports was a triangle. Mm-hmm. And the triangle is to me quite simple. LeBron James, of course, has made the famous quote about, hey, you can't have a game without the players. LeBron, that's exactly right. You could not be more accurate. I'd also like to point out you can't have the game without sports, without management. You can't have it without an owner. You need to have somebody backing up. Oh, and by the way, the third part of the triangle, you can't have a game without fans. They pay the cable bill. They pay the streaming. They pay for the tickets, the whole thing. I just feel when they get to these negotiations, the bottom part of the triangle is the part they never even think about.
Yeah. Well, it certainly shows in the game times for the World Series. It shows in a lot of different ways. And I see what's happened in Pittsburgh, and it was kind of hard. I mean, this year obviously they didn't reach a million this year. They got about 800,000 there. But then you throw the asterisk on of them. You know, there was the limited seating because of the COVID. But then to that degree, too, the Pirates were a team that, you know, that even after the state kind of Pennsylvania even opened up a little bit, the Pirates still held off for like almost an additional month before they opened up their capacity to above 50%. And that was their choice. It wasn't like they, you know, were being forced to at that point by the state government or anything. So maybe I think some of that might have been the fact that they were just short on staffing. Throughout the season. I mean, even late in the season, there were concession stands that normally would have been open, you know, and just weren't. So that factored into it as well. But you're right. The fan part of it is the part that always gets overlooked. And I think that's because they know people will come back, that no matter how bad it gets, you know, look at, it's been pretty bad at Pittsburgh for almost 50 years now, and people still come back, you know. So, you know, I think they look for another 3 or 4 years of this until the next CBA, and we'll see what happens after that.
Okay, so here comes the hard question. And if you don't want to answer it, I completely understand. But how do you think it plays out? I mean, do they strike? Do they lock out? Does it extend to the spring training? Is it extended the season? What's your gut tell you?
Boy. I really don't know. I think about that every now and then because I'm trying to, I obviously have to pre-plan for like, you know, what I'm going to write and when I'm going to write it. And if there's no spring training, how am I going to fill that void? I don't know. I've always kind of figured that there would be, it might take a month or two. And by a month or two, I mean like, after the start of spring training. Before things restart to get hairy and they really sit down, because there are some big issues that have to be hammered out this time. That it won't be just like, you know, spring training was supposed to start February 12th and we'll come to a deal on the February 14th. I think it could be, if, you know, March or April before we see something hammered out, and then they'll truncate the season and have a quickie spring training of some sort. And, of course, you do that, now you're even playing with fire, because guys already had such, you know, 60 games in 2020 and now a full season this year, and now do you want to shorten a guy's season again? Boy, now you start to wonder about the effects on guys' arms and everything else that goes with it. It's dicey. It's a bad time for this CBA to expire. Never a good time, but this is an especially bad time.
My friend, please continue to thaw out, and maybe we'll have something more positive to talk about Saturday night. How about that?
That would be nice. I'm going to be there again Saturday. I'm flying back home on Friday.
Oh, good.
Packing up the car and just doing, I spent last week in the state college. I'll spend this week in the state college, and in between I'll spend sunshine. So, but yeah, hopefully hopefully things go a bit better on Saturday.
If you get a chance, stop by and see Jack and me before the game. So
I will. Last week I had to deal with my my canopy, my tailgate canopy got ripped up by the wind. So I kind of consumed.
Awful.
Yeah, it was pretty nasty out there, as you probably know. So I think this week be a little bit less intense of a tailgate. So maybe I will. Maybe I'll stop by and say hello on my way to the on my way to the stadium.
Appreciate that, Rob. I appreciate you always, my friend. Thank you so much.
All right, Steve. You take care out there, man.